Welcome in, everybody. It's another episode of Inside Boxing. We're presented by PPV.com. In association with Uncrowned and Yahoo Sports, PPV.com is the home for all combat sports and all live events, really. Got a lot of tennis, got a lot of AEW wrestling, some concerts, and big-time boxing. Fully expect Errol Spence versus Tim Tszyu to be carried on PPV.com. That's coming up in July, right around the corner. Tank Davis supposedly will be fighting Floyd Schofield, which could be a PBC event, and that will also be on PPV.com. They're a proud presenting sponsor. No subscriptions, stream it to any device. So shout out to PPV.com, who allows us to do this show twice a week. And Chris, I can say something that I've never been able to say before in the 481 episode history of this podcast. We are doing this podcast as world champions. I can say that. You actually are a world champion. The New York Knicks are NBA champs, and it still hasn't set in. I've been on a three-day bender. There it is. The Chris Algieri's even. Chris Algieri's got the merch on. The Knicks are champions. I can't believe it.
Yeah, we haven't been alive long enough to see them as champions. So I call myself a lifelong suffering Knicks fan. And they're the only team I've ever rooted for. They're the only team I've ever, like, I've never purchased an NBA ticket to any other team. Like, I've only gone to see the Knicks. I'm not a huge basketball fan, but I'm a big Knicks fan because, you know, when you're in New York, it's just a vibe, man. And I've been courtside for Knicks games. I have a Knicks jersey given to me by the Garden. I've fought in the Garden.
That's a flex.
You know, like, the Knicks are just, if you're not from New York, you just don't get it. And when they have always struggled to get over the hump, and now we're here, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's been an unbelievable 10 weeks. I think it's captivated the sports world. I think you could just say, if you're not from New York, you don't get it. But I think people are starting to get it when they go on TikTok, they go on social media, and they see all the scenes that are coming out of New York. To me, that's the coolest thing. Obviously, winning the basketball games and is something I never thought I'd ever see, them to go all the way and win it all as a lifelong Knicks fan. Years and years of being the worst, years of being a punching bag, years and years of just being a joke and everyone just laughing at us saying we're cursed. To erase that curse and to do it in the fashion that they did, 16 wins, only 3 losses, 15 of their last 16, one of the biggest point differentials up and down the list. But one of the coolest things, in my opinion, is seeing the New Yorkness of it. I know that's not a word, but I'm just making it up. To see like how cool New York is looking coming out of this. And as a New Yorker, you are as well. I'm like extremely proud to be a New Yorker. These scenes only could happen in this city. Like the watch parties, the random watch parties, the scenes coming from the streets. Obviously, there were some idiots out there that ruined it for a lot of us, but the majority of it is good-hearted, fun times. In New York City, I will be at the parade on Thursday.
Oh, talk about flex. Talk about flex. Okay.
Well, anyone can go. I mean, there's going to be 5 million people there. I don't know where I'm going to be. There's no plan. Everyone I'm texting is like, I don't have a plan. I'm just going to show up.
So this
up.
Might be our last episode. You might not make it out of there.
We're taping a very special episode tomorrow that's going to run Thursday or Friday because I will be at the parade. But yeah, I know this is a boxing show, but I do think that it's taken over the world. And before the World Cup, once the World Cup is in full swing, then that's going to take over.
It's way big.
The World Cup's going to take over pretty damn soon. Apparently, there's a Canobio on Uruguay, too. I just found out.
You look like you could be Uruguayan. Italy. There's a lot of Italians down there, so.
Yeah, I forgot his name. I have it here.
Uruguay's, they're always good. It's a very, very.
Augustin Canobio.
Nice name. Augustin. Strong name.
Yeah. He's on the Uruguay national team. But yeah, New York is on top, baby. We can say for the next year that we are champs. And now we got to run it back. Now we got to become two-time or back-to-back champs. We'll see. But yeah, it's been a whirlwind couple of days. Watched it out with the parents and all my brothers. That's all I wanted to do. Like, obviously, I wanted to be in the city and kind of see that scene. But I wanted to be with like all my brothers and my dad because we suffered. Yeah. Just like you said, you suffered, we suffered. We all suffered together through like some really bad teams and some really
bad
lean times.
It was a big stretch of bad teams. But then we also had like great teams that just couldn't do it.
Yeah,
like
the 90s.
Yeah,
like seeing Ewing.
The Pat Riley like era with Pat Ewing and oh man. And so 99.
Sharks. We just had Jordan.
99 losing. was rough.
Lost to the Spurs. Yeah,
in the 94, there was the Houston Rockets, right, that we lost to? That was...
Lost to the Rockets, lost to the
Game
Spurs.
Game 7, horrible ending, really. And that team, it was basically a dream team. We still couldn't do it. That's where the curse was developed.
Yeah, and it's over, guys. The curse is over.
Snapped.
But about to be obnoxious for the next year with the New York Knicks. Another thing we need to talk about here is we are throwing another pre-fight party, Zayas versus Boots. We're going to be at McMahon's Public House June 27th. Tickets are $20, drink specials. Come hang out with us. This will be our third party that we're throwing. We did one in January for Shakur and Teofimo over in Manhattan. Now we're bringing it to Brooklyn. You know what to expect at these parties if you've been at them. It's just a big community of boxing fans. We'll obviously be there talking to you guys. We bring special guests, fighters. It's a great time. It's from 5 to 7. If you want to stay and hang out and watch the fight, well, we can do that as well. So come join us at McMahon's Public House Saturday, June 27th, before Zayas Boots, which is now... right in the rearview mirror, not in the rearview mirror.
What's right around the corner. Mirror?
Right around the corner, thank you. Is there a front mirror? It's in the windshield, and it's quickly approaching. So let's go out and have a good time on Saturday, June 27th. It's going to be a blast.
Yeah, guys, pick up your tickets. I mean, we had a crazy turnout last time, and we don't want to have to turn people away, but we kind of do, because that's a good thing. It shows that it's there, and people want to do this. We do have a lot of fun. The best part is we get fans from all over, literally all over the world, because people are in town. They're in town to see the fight. We, you know, boxing is full of fanatical fans who are willing to travel. So there's going to be people from all over the world that are going to come and chat with us and hang out. That's my favorite part. We get to talk to our listeners and true boxing heads, people who really know what they're talking about. I rarely like talking boxing when I'm in nature. Yeah, when I'm out touching grass, because nobody knows what the hell they're talking about, but our listeners do. So we generally have some really good boxing conversations when we do have these events, and you never know who's gonna come by. Like we always have boxing luminaries pop in. Last time we had a Michaela Mayer pop in. We've had Dmitry Bivol pop in the past, Zhile Zhang. You know, we try to invite all of our friends, whoever's around. So should be another great event. And the BWA Boxing Writers Association dinner is that week as well. That's on Thursday. So there's going to be a lot of people swirling around. So,
bro, New York is crazy right now. Between
New York's like always crazy.
The Knicks, World Cup. We got the U.S. Golf. U.S. Open is on Shinnecock on Long Island. Puerto Rican Day Parade. Big Boots fight. And Boots and Zayas, we got the BWA dinner.
You can't beat New York summer. You cannot beat it. Like, yes, I'm in Florida. I've been in Florida for a while now because I hate New York winters, but you cannot beat New York summers.
Yeah, it's been an awesome couple weeks, and now we got a big fight on the horizon. That's the word I was looking for. On the horizon, June 27th. So come hang out with us. Buy your tickets now. We'll have a link on YouTube, Eventbrite. I think it's $20 gets you a drink.
Which in New York City... and beer is like $18, so you basically got your money back.
Yeah, it helps us cover some of the costs to put on these events, so really appreciate that. There also is a narrative forming on boxing Twitter that we are anti-Boots.
We?
Getting, both of us, getting a lot of tweets over the weekend saying that I am anti-Boots, saying that I believe he's a hype job, and this is like the common thing that happens on this show or happens on Twitter. Is people think that I'm saying these things. What we've said in the past is the reason why people are giving Zayas a chance outside of what can happen inside of the ring is we just don't know how good Boots could be. We've heard stories about him sparring. Chris, you've told me them. We've seen him in the ring against lesser opponents, and he's been able to dominate them all. But there is a little bit of like, what could this guy be? Is it like when he steps into the ring with someone of his equal, not saying that Zayas is his equal, but if he steps it up, how will he perform? Somehow that get misconstrued into me saying that Boots is a hype job. I've never said something that demonstrative on this show, and I never will. What I do is I go out and I see what everyone is saying. I get a feel from what people are talking about, people in the boxing, people in the know. And then I bring it here and say, oh, wow, there's a group of people out there that don't believe Boots is all that. That's not saying that I think that or you think that. Just wanted to address that right away.
Well said, Dan. And I preface all of this talk because Xander is literally my guy. Sparred with him. I've known him for a long time. Known since he was basically a kid. That being said, I know what Boots is. I'm the one who gives the reports of what I hear from everybody who's in, because I'm in these gyms. I'm at the fights. I'm boots on the ground. I talk to these people all the time. I know what Boots is. Boots is an absolute monster and is on the precipice of being the guy. But you gotta beat guys like Xander, and you gotta do it impressively. It's not just about getting past them. You gotta go out there and dominate. If you're trying to be that guy, if you're trying to walk in the footsteps of a Terrence Crawford, you know, which is where the comparisons have been coming with Boots. You gotta perform under the lights. Guys like Floyd Mayweather, they always go out there and they do what they need to do. Obviously not a puncher, but still goes out there and wins the big fights. And Boots, this is his opportunity. He's got a real guy in front of him. Is he the favorite? Absolutely. Should he win this fight? Absolutely. Am I picking him to win this fight? Yep. But like, you got to do it. We got to get there and do it. And we're not going to sit here and be on the bandwagon for any fighter. Doesn't matter if I have a relationship with you. Doesn't matter if I like the guy as a fighter. I'm not a bandwagon guy. We're going to cover the sport. We cover it as unbiased as we possibly can. And then we give opinions. If you don't like the opinion, doesn't mean I don't like your guy. And it's not about liking either, but
I know. It's just it's tough because it's a sport that it's not a team. It's just one fighter out there, and there's a lot of it's an ethnic sport too. So people think that we're pulling for one fighter over the other.
Are you Puerto Rican?
Neither of us are. No, really? Oh. No, I'm not. I am not. But that's the thing too, and I appreciate the people out there on Twitter and socials that like come to our defense and said like, you know, Dan has never said anything bad about Boots, or like they never say, or the Shakur stuff in the past, like I'm pretty sure Dan and Chris have never said anything bad about you, Shakur, or anything personal. Like, we will never make it personal. We will never try to like you said, be a bandwagon fan or a ride for one fighter, because that doesn't make any sense for us. We talk about the entire sport, and yeah, like what you said is like Boots has to go out there and do it. I haven't made my pick yet, but I'm obviously leaning towards Boots to win this fight. But he has to go out there and do it. And if he beats Boots, then this is step one towards what Eddie Hearn says is him becoming the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. Because I do believe he has that talent inside of him, and I do believe that he can do that. And I've been waiting for years for Boots Ennis to get on the scene and become who we think he is.
I was in Grand Rapids this weekend. A lot of yeah. Northeast coaches. Reports I'm hearing about Boots in the gym.
That's what I mean. Like Boots in the gym. Boots in the gym.
I mean, I'm talking to guys firsthand who are there, and they're telling me
destroying
like,
them.
He's busting rib cages. He's busting noses. I've heard from guys that I really trust, like fighters, trainers that are friends of mine, that tell me like, yo, watch, wait, what I've seen in the gym. You know, a lot of it, I think, was related to the weight. I think he was really hurting himself to make 47. And he even said himself, he probably sees himself at 168 at one point. Maybe that's going to be his top. Wow. That's how big this young man is and what he's doing, you know, sacrificing to get to where he is. So like, we haven't seen the best of Boots yet. We might not see Boots' best until 60 or 68. Look at Terrence Crawford. He got better as he got bigger. You know, a lot of guys, people don't understand how much it takes out of you to make weight. And a 12-rounder is a long time. If you don't get a guy out of there in the beginning, you know, having that weight advantage can actually hurt you down the stretch. But also just reactions, especially a guy like Boots who's so reactive and athletic. If you are just a short percentage taken down, it can affect all that because of his style. So, but I've been hearing some nasty reports, which is maybe why the line has been changing. The reports are leaking and people are getting busted up in the gym, and because the line's gotten real wide, right, Dan? It's getting wider.
Yeah, it's really wide. I'm looking at it right now on FanDuel. Ennis is ballooned to a -430 favorite.
Wow, that's big.
4-1.
That's big.
That's huge. That's huge. And that's, you know, there's a lot of hype behind him. There's a lot of, he's just good. He's just really good. Just really good. Really like, good. I'm not a hater. Like, of course he's good. Like, I'm not some type of Zayas super fan. We're just trying to figure out both sides of this and give both guys a shot as we head in and try to make you think. That's one thing we can try to do
I actually am. I am a Zayas fan. I'm a Boots fan as well. So like, we can be fans. We are fans. I think maybe we're fans first, because that's, you know.
I'm fans of big fights. I'm fans of fights that allow us to do pre-fight parties that are big enough.
I'm fans of fighters, dude. I love fighters. I love this sport. I wanna elevate these guys the best that I can, and I want them to make all the money possible. I don't have a jealous bone in me. I want guys to succeed. So I like both these guys. So I can be a fan of both guys, and I can give you an unbiased a pick or opinion.
That's one thing I will say about you, Chris, is that you are not a bitter former champ, because I've met a lot of those.
There's more than not.
Especially when they see like the type of money that's being made, and like, you know, I feel like if you were in this era, I feel like you would have done even better.
Yeah, I would have made a lot more.
You had an unbelievable career. It would have been more money, because you would have figured out how to market it and all that. But yeah, I do like that. You're not a bitter guy. We root for everyone. I root for big fights. Any event that allows us to have a pre-fight party that justifies doing that is pretty damn cool. So head down to McMahon's Public House. Very happy to bring this to Brooklyn. We've usually only done them in Manhattan.
Brooklyn was a little bit of...
Now we're stepping
in. Dan had to jump through some hoops for this one, guys. So make sure you thank him.
Yeah, buy some tickets and let's have a grand old time. All right, let's get to what happened this past weekend. Bam Rodriguez stops Antonio Vargas in 6 rounds. It was his debut at 118 pounds. Thought it was a really, really good test for Bam. He lost a few rounds early on. Vargas had a lot of pop, was durable for the early rounds until he wasn't. But Bam drops him in the 5th, stops him in the 6th with some blistering combos and angles. If there are any questions about if Bam's power can translate to 118, I think that's put to rest because he looked outstanding. All in all, I think it was a great showing for Bam Rodriguez, who maybe now is in the top 2 pound for pound. But let's just talk first about what we saw out of Bam Rodriguez on Saturday night.
A couple ways to look at this. I'll start negative. You know, first fight at 118, the size mattered, right? The height of Vargas was an issue. He said it himself, you know, in an interview. He said, yeah, 118 is different. He was cracking a little bit. Like he had some pop that he didn't expect. So the punches feel different. Dealing with taller guys, dealing with bigger bodies. So he struggled a little bit in the beginning. And for Bam, struggling means he lost a round. Like he lost 2 rounds. You know, I think it was even after 4. You know, which again, 4 rounds is for a 12 round fight. 4 rounds is very early on. So you know, it's even after 4. We're looking at like, is this people are thinking upset because we watched Bam lose 2 rounds. We saw Bam lose 2 rounds. So now people are like, could he lose? Like that's how good Bam is. If he loses a round or if he loses 2 rounds, it's like, oh wow. So you look at this like the weight's real. This is 118. Inoue's at 22. Mm. We're pushing Bam to fight at 122 next against Inoue, who's on his way to 26. Does size become a factor? All right, so that's the negative take. Positive take, just growing into the weight class, figuring it out. And listen, these guys, they're not here to lay down. And a guy like Bam, being as high in the pound-for-pound ranking as he is, like you mentioned, could be top 2 at this point, every opponent is going to be the best version of themselves. This was Vargas' Super Bowl. You fight Bam now, this is your Super Bowl, especially in these weights, with these smaller weights where you need big names. And it's easier to make the big names because the smaller weights don't have a choice to go anywhere else to make any money. This is Vargas' Super Bowl, and he showed up. He had a good game plan. He fought well. Still, Bam figures him out and gets him out of there relatively quickly. 6 rounds, that's pretty quick for a 12-rounder to get a guy out of there, to make that adjustment and finish the way he did. And the power obviously traveled. Power didn't look any different than it was at 115. He still hurts you and finishes you. So that's the good and the bad of my thoughts on that performance.
I think that's pretty, you nailed it there, because there's 2 ways to look at it. You know, the being even after 4 rounds with a guy in Vargas who was good as a champion, but was not on
Olympian,
Bam's level.
Good amateur
Bam's
pedigree, tall.
Right.
A lot of things.
And Bam is going to fight better opponents coming up as he moves up, obviously ending with Inoue. But the power, I mean, you can't knock that. The guy has now had consecutive knockouts here. I think he's on 3 straight stoppages, and he's doing it just ferociously. I mean, these
walk-off chaos. Angles. They're like he hits you and he's like, it's on. Walks away.
That's what I mean. He's not going through the 12 rounds and he's not just going on and on and on and leaving doubt there. The only doubt is like, oh, he might struggle in his next fight, or he might struggle with Inoue, who's pound for pound great. He's erasing all doubts by stopping these guys. His first fight in a new weight class, he stops the guy. He drops him in the fifth, and that was a nasty, nasty combination. And Vargas looked
done and badly hurt. Yeah.
The first knockdown, I was like, how the heck did he get up from that? I mean, he was like on his both knees, and he was like, ugh. And then the sixth round, he does it again with the angles and that left hand. It's one of the most beautiful punches in boxing. He's one of the most gifted offensive fighters in the entire sport, and it's just amazing to watch with the footwork. I mean, as a fighter yourself, you must be in awe when you watch him fight, because like angles are everything in boxing, and I haven't seen a fighter in like that in years that can really master them with the power. It's really something to
watch. It's one thing to be able to create the angles against high-level opposition. It's another thing to be in position where your feet have the structure to still throw hard and to not get excited and put too much fat on the punch, pop your elbow up or do whatever. He still does it fundamentally perfect, the punch. Creates the angle, is in the right position, and has the base to generate the power and is able to pull the trigger to land the shot. The guy's left hand is a homing missile. He has the artillery, no question. Obviously, he's knocking these guys out. But he also has the targeting system to get it there. Because Teddy Atlas said it great. He's like, you could have the heaviest artillery in the world, but if you can't get it there, it doesn't matter. Bam does both. He can get it there, and when he lands, it's explosive. He's wildly impressive. And he consistently does it with the best in the world. He didn't just move up and wait and fight a new weight class. He fought a champion at the weight class. Maybe not the best guy in the division. Doesn't matter. He's still one of the belt holders. He's a champion for a reason. Jumps up in weight class, right to a champion, knocks him out.
Bam gets the win in six rounds. He looks spectacular, in my opinion. His first fight at 118 should erase some of the doubters. But there's always going to be doubters. And there's a big fight with Inoue looming. And I wanted to look at the pound-for-pound list. Not the biggest pound-for-pound guy in the world, but you got to figure that Inoue is number one now. After the Nakatani win, and with Usyk struggling against Verhoeven, does that mean Bam moves into the top two? And if Bam does fight Inoue next, not that this fight needed any more hype, it could be one versus two on the pound-for-pound list. But are you looking at Bam like that high now on this list? Do you have him jumping over Usyk?
There's argument there for Usyk because of, one, I think the weight classes matter, because you look at the run of form of Usyk and who he's fought, cruiserweight, heavyweight, undersized, but then you have the argument, well, Bam Bam's moving up too, but he's not fighting the level of opposition that Usyk has. The issue is, like, what have you done for me lately? Because Usyk struggles with Rico Verhoeven and struggles mightily, and Bam has not struggled at all with anyone. So yeah, there's an argument there. And that's one of the things with the pound for pound, because it's such a fluid listing and ranking, which is why we hate it. And it changes all the time. And we could talk about it today, and next week it'll be completely different. But you're still looking at top three, right? Which is crazy to think about. And if you got number one fighting number three, if you have number one fighting number two, when does that happen? You know, if Inoue and Bam, when does that actually happen? By the time Inoue and Bam do step into the ring, if they are to step in the ring, and we got our fingers crossed for that, it most likely will be number one and number two. It might not be right now. There's an argument right now. I think a lot of people would have Inoue number two. Bam number two. But you're going to get a violent pushback for the Usyk fans and for just boxing people in general. So there is an argument whether he's two or three. There's no argument whether, you know, one versus three is not wildly important and historic.
I'm not, like you said, not the biggest pound for pound guy, because like you said, like, these guys don't fight enough, and it's just a what have you done for me lately type of thing. Is it accolades? Is it a popularity contest? But what I do believe in is the Mount Rushmore of it, the top four of it. And there's no doubt that Bam's in the top four. Now with, you know, Bivol being so inactive, Beterbiev losing to Bivol, Canelo, and the Crawford retiring, it's opened up some spots. And I have no problem. The best fighters in the world, the top three best fighters in the world, are Usyk, Inoue, and Bam. And you could make a case for Bivol at four. And, you know, that's starting to look even a little murky because he just hasn't been active, but he's still damn good.
You've got Benavides on his heels right there. Because
Benavides is in the top seven.
I think I got him in top five. I think it's him and Bivol, and I think you've got Usyk and, in a way, Usyk, Bam, Bivol, Benavides right on his tail.
That's an awesome list.
Awesome.
That's an awesome list. So, yeah, any way you slice it or any way you want to cut it up, this could be one versus two come January if Inoue and Bam step into the ring, which brings us to our next topic. Is Bam Rodriguez ready for Inoue next?
Is he ready? If you ask him, yes. He's like, whatever. But I'm friends with Robert Garcia. I talked to him quite a bit on ProBox TV. Spoke to him for a long time last yesterday. But I've also been talking to him for months, and Robert's a very genuine guy. He says it how it is. He doesn't mince words. And he's been saying the same thing. He wants Bam to have another fight at 118 before they move up to 122 and look for the Inoue fight. And maybe another unification fight. There's some good names out there. He also told me prior to this fight, he expected Vargas to be tough, but he didn't expect it to be necessarily a tough fight. So he said he's going to give Bam a few weeks off and bring him right back in October, which doesn't mess up the timeline for what they're talking about for Inoue anyway, because they weren't talking about Inoue fighting this year. Eddie's been saying early 2027 or May of 2027. So there's time. So why not bring him right back and then give him time to properly prepare for a mega fight like that if that is to be what is next?
A lot of things have to happen here. Inoue doesn't wait for anyone. He's got his own schedule. He has his own economy. He moves like a Canelo. He moves like a Mayweather. So he probably wants to fight one more time this year, Inoue. We're in June. That would be, he's been fighting in December pretty much every year for a while now. So, and his days at 122 are
very limited.
Are not long, because he hasn't said in a way that he wants to go to 126 just yet, but we're running out of 122 opponents for Inoue. He's wiped out everyone.
He just beat the guy to beat. So,
right. Like the Nakatani fight was, I wouldn't say rush, but like Nakatani didn't have many fights at 122 before he stepped in there with Inoue. And that one wasn't perfect.
And
timing.
Nakatani got hurt, right? Didn't he break his orbital?
Yeah, but he's not fighting anytime
soon. That's what I mean. Like, you know, I think like, there was a possibility for a rematch there because the first fight was good. But that's out.
We're on two different timelines here. It's whatever Inoue wants, and it's whatever Turkey wants. Turkey's the one financing this fight. And Turkey has said, I want it in January. That's the report being floated out there. So if Bam fights here in June, doesn't take too much damage, looks really good, gets the stoppage. September, October is what Robert Garcia said immediately after the fight. Robert Garcia also said immediately after the fight that he got text messages from Turkey right after. That gives me a lot of, keeps me hopeful that this fight will happen. Like Turkey, when Turkey wants a fight, he usually gets it. So he's letting it be known that he wants this fight, and Robert Garcia knows that. But Robert Garcia is the trainer slash manager of Bam Rodriguez, so he's going to look out for his guy. You say September, October doesn't really throw a wrench into a January fight, but it kind of does. Like, we're operating on this boxing world where they fight twice a year. I hate it. Bam does stay active. Inoue does stay active. We're talking about a guy in Inoue that fights four times a year. If Bam fights in September and October, we have to hope that, number one, he wins. Number two, he does not get hurt. He doesn't suffer a cut. Doesn't injure any part of him. And even then, like, that's October, November, December, January. Then we're looking at 4 months from October to January. Now these timelines are starting to get funky. And in that time, what is Inoue doing? He's not sitting around and waiting for Bam Rodriguez. Although, I mean, I wouldn't fault the guy if he took a step back four fights in 2025. Who does he think he is at this age? It's unbelievable from Inoue. So we're operating on a lot of different levels here for a fight that I believe Bam has to take. He has to show some urgency, but he also has to go in it thinking that he can win. And if one more fight at 118 or one more fight at 122 makes a better fight with Inoue, then I'm all for it. Like, we don't have to rush it too much. I mean, we don't also have to sit back too long. So if it happens midway through next year, I'm not going to be upset.
But that's because it means what Robert's pushing for. Because
it means that in a way he's going to be at his best. Bam's going to be at his best. It's like in the NBA, like when these teams get a lot of rest in between a series or a lot of rest in between a few games. Like, yeah, we want to watch it next. Like, I wish the Knicks played every night, but I want the best game possible. And I think that's what we get in this Inouye situation.
My only thing is, though, because if Inouye has to stick around and he's getting to the point where he may need to move up, you can get a diminished Inouye. We don't want that either.
At 122? Yeah. I think he's so set. I think he is. That's his weight, 122. Like, you agree?
I don't know. Because he has traversed weight classes as good as anyone I can remember since Manny Pacquiao. And he comes in strong. Wow. He comes into the weight and he looks it. He puts on lean tissue. They're so systematic in the way they approach their training and their diet and getting themselves to the weight. I have reports from inside Inouye's camp, guys who have sparred with him. He's big. He's a big 22-pounder. He's grown into the weight. He said it's like it's his so weight. Weird. Like, I don't know about that. He might be growing out of that weight class too.
I want to see Inouye at 126 because it's just fresh matchups.
Man, there's so many.
But now
so
this Bam fight that we never thought was possible, this Bam fight that we never really, like, it was like thrown out there maybe as like a pipe dream. For a while it was, oh, Inouye and Tank. Yeah. When Tank
that
was
the pipe dream, silly
right.
matchup. This one actually works.
With Bam just getting better and better and just showing that he's the goods and rising the pound for pound list, it's now become the main focus. And with Turkey into these types of fights, and that's another thing too, is if Turkey says, I want it in January and I don't want you to take a tune-up fight, I know it's crazy because I never really liked anyone to tell someone what to do. It's kind of like the beauty of boxing is everyone kind of operates on their own schedule. It's not the UFC with Dana White. But Turkey's the one signing these checks. And who am I to say that Bam wouldn't listen to that?
I got told what to do and who to fight my whole career. So don't feel bad.
Right. When there are guys signing the checks, you're going to do it. And like when you're in your prime money-making years, and for Bam, I know he's 26 and he's talking about, I have to fight Inouye before I retire. Like this could be it in terms of like mega, mega fight. Like we've talked about this many times on the show. You know, this is not 147. This is not one, heavyweight. This isn't middleweight. There's not going to be a big fight coming down the pipeline for Bam. Oh, and I'll wait till I'm 30, like Mayweather did, and then I'll step on the gas and make my mega millions. No, that's not going to happen. Like, Inouye is a rare breed. He is a once-in-a-generation type of fighter at that weight that generates crazy dollars. So that's a big factor in this, too. It's like, all right, I'm going to take one or two more fights, Bam. Man, that might not be a move here. Like, all of a sudden, you take two more fights at 118 or 122, and Inouye's like, screw this, I'm going to freaking 126, and I don't need Bam. Bam needs me. Fight's gone.
Inouye doesn't even have to say screw this. He's going to do what he wants to do. He's going to do whatever he's doing anyway.
Well, he is in turn saying screw. He's never going to say that because he's a very classy guy.
No, of course. But that's not even in his head. He's just like, no, this is...
But him moving up would be like, I'm not entertaining this fight anymore.
I feel like
I'm going to do what I want to do.
Almost like... objectively, he's like, I don't know, this is time for me to move up. It's just, it's just, unfortunately, this isn't going to work because he's not there yet and I'm on my way out. You know, it is what it is.
And then there would be like, Inouye's a duck.
And he's not going to hear it. He's not going to hear it at all. He's
Inouye's a duck.
And then he's going to go fight Rafa Espinoza at 126.
That's what I mean. Inouye's a duck to go to 126, his billionth weight class, and fight guys
that are studs.
So much bigger than him.
That may be better than any of the guys he fought, and they're the biggest. You're like,
yeah. I'm excited now because I thought we were running out of opponents for Inouye. I thought, man, this guy's so damn good. I'm not done watching him fight in Japan. I'm not done waking up early in the morning and watching this generational talent. But now we have like four or five fights for Inouye in the next couple of years between Bam and then what's waiting for him at 126. It's awesome. That's amazing. So we maybe have like two, three years pushing it of Inouye testing himself and really, really, really becoming like
an
all-time status.
And all of them would be like, big fights except for the very next fight. There's no one for Inouye in the very next fight.
Oh, yeah. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with fighting like a mandatory or...
I mean, listen, Inouye's done it. He's fought guys that were not on the level in between because he is so active.
Well, that's the knock, right? If you're looking for an Inouye detractor, he'll be like, oh, who are some of these guys he's fighting? That's the voice they talk
in. It is.
He's not even that good, Inouye. Who's even? Inoue needs to fight in the U.S. That's another one too. I'm looking at 118. Are you a little shocked that Robert's not like our next fight's gonna be at 122?
No, I'm not. I mean, yes, I am.
If in a perfect world, Bam would he'd fight one more at 118, one at 122, then Inoue. Then we're looking at
that's
2028.
Yeah, that's I don't think that's realistic. But the next fight should be Inoue's brother. It just makes such a good narrative.
Oh, I have that in my notes.
Yeah, it's Inoue's brother's neck. That is the next fight. I know they're talking about Christian Medina, the WBO champ. Metrim has him. It's an easy fight to make. And I was talking to Robert about that yesterday. Like that would be a very easy fight to make because of Eddie. But I think you bring Bam to Japan, and he fights Takuma, and then.
Bro, that's like Rocky.
Yeah,
shit.
Bro. Like it's kickboxer. You beat my brother. Really? You know, now I gotta go.
But imagine the scene. It's like Bam coming over there, fighting his brother who has a WBC strap.
Correct. He's a world champion.
Isn't just like it's brother. No offense to like Bobby Pacquiao and those guys of the world.
They were not on the level.
He isn't just some like, oh, we're gonna bring your brother in. This is the freaking WBC champ of 118, Takuma Inoue. You bring in Bam into Japan, a big venue. The hype and the buildup with Inoue in the shadows, literally with his brother,
in the ringside, back with him, watching. in the dressing room with his father. His father, the father's the trainer. The father, the brother fighting him. It's everything. It's theater.
I see Bam knocking out Takuma, and like as Takuma goes down, the shot is right to Inoue.
And he's locked ringside. In. No facial, no expression.
It's like a Rocky. Like, as Takuma's going down, here comes Inoue, and he's standing there, and he's staring at Bam, and Bam's pointing at him.
You just wrote a script for an anime comic book.
That'd be amazing. Boxing anime. If we only lived in Japan, where people actually have a thirst
for
that.
I can draw. I'll draw that up. I'll draw Bam and
please.
And Inoue and Takuma and... What's the father's name?
I don't know, but he's a fucking G.
I know his name. I feel bad. He's such a good coach too.
Father Inoue.
No.
Bobby. So we'll see. It's interesting. These are good problems to have. It's timing is everything in boxing. I want to see it. I'm in a lather for this fight. I was not 6 months ago, but now I want to see it. We're in this big fight era. We have a ATM in Turkey financing these fights. So let's get it on. One more fight. Okay. This is the most realistic situation. Bam gets one more at 118. If it's Takuma Inoue, that'd be awesome. If it's Medina, fine. It's just all about Bam getting ready for this fight. 118. He gets one more in September, October.
Likely unification. One more.
Then we have to get Inoue on the same schedule too, because Inoue usually likes to fight in December. All right, whatever. Both guys get one more fight in between, and then it's not going to happen in January.
I think get Inoue in September, Bam in October, and then they fight in January.
May. Oh, where are they? I was thinking later in 2026.
September, 2027. October, November, December, January. Because if Turkey wants January, and he's pushing for January, and maybe you can push it off to May and do a big May card.
Like, so I know it doesn't matter like what month. Like
it doesn't.
But like January, big fights are like,
yeah,
I don't know.
It's true. But Japan likes... They like the New Year's Eve fights. It's Shingo Inoue, by the way. That was the name of the father.
That's his dad's name.
Got to show respect to Shingo. Legend. Absolute incredible trainer.
Shingo. About
Shingo Inoue. I knew the name too because I went to high school with a kid named Shingo. He's a wrestler. He's very good.
Shout out Shingo. What else we got going on? Did you watch the UFC at the White House card?
I did not.
It was a spectacle, man.
I saw the scenes.
They were doing walkouts. Bro, the scenes, if whatever your political stance is.
Oh, let's not make it political.
No, it did turn into a political thing. Stupid. You know, Josh Hokic says that Michelle Obama's
he's
a man.
An idiot, like, that's
ass. What a dumb comment that was. Ruined the whole
that's
night.
That's his whole
for him.
Shtick. His whole shtick is you know, pretending to be drunk at the weigh-in, say off the wall things.
That's so annoying.
Just no frontal lobe to filter. Anything that he says.
Come on, man. Why did you say that? Like, I understand. Yeah, that's why
the crowd didn't even. They didn't even like. They didn't.
Because it's like
so
a joke
weird.
From like 10 years ago. Like, it's not even a joke. Stupid. Anyway, if you watched that fight, the scenes were insanity. Like, they were doing walkouts through the Oval Office.
That's mind-blowing.
Could you imagine that? Like, Chris, you're walking out. You had some pretty cool walkouts. Barclays, MSG, UK, Paramount, Huntington. How can I forget?
Those are pretty cool, too.
Imagine walking through the Oval Office on your way to punch someone in the face.
No, that would be surreal. Surreal wouldn't even be the word. I don't even know what that is. That would be like an acid.
Like, how do you channel your adrenaline?
Like, what is going on?
How do you channel, like, the excitement? How do you channel that? Because that's such a unique atmosphere and such a unique setting. They're never going to do that again. They're never going to create anything close.
Trump and Dana White are holding hands. You're like, what the hell is, what is this fever dream?
Making out?
What is this fever dream? I mean, the Blue Angels are flying across the sky. You're walking into a cage to go fight a man.
Walking down the steps.
Crazy.
Yeah. And Justin Gaethje, the American, gets the win in the main event.
Savage.
Freaking pieces up Topuria. I had Gaethje winning this fight, and I didn't think he would win. I just thought, hey, that would be a cool story if the American underdog, the legend in UFC at age 37, let's hear it for all the olds out there, goes in there, and he did it, like, at Topuria's game. Like, I heard a lot of people telling me, like, oh, Gaethje will win this fight because of his leg kicks, takedowns. But he beat him at Topuria's game.
Just jabbing his counter right hand.
Just jabbing his face off.
Bro. Couldn't miss the right hand.
And this is the
Couldn't miss the right hand.
Bro, and messed up Topuria's face. And this is the same Topuria who had the nerve, the audacity to call out Bud Crawford, to call out Ryan Garcia, to say I can beat boxers. Humbled. That guy is cocky. That is a cocky little man.
Not anymore. He got exposed. He got exposed. And
dude, his face, I never seen a face. His face was fucked
I mean, and it was really off the jab. I mean, listen, you
can't block a jab.
Nose.
You're going to beat Bud Crawford? You can't block a jab?
Under his eyes were destroyed. Look, you could see his cheekbone. It was bad. And the ref essentially stopped it after round three, and he talked him into letting him go out there.
What was that?
I don't know. And then around
have you ever seen a doctor overruled?
By a fighter? No. He literally got overruled by Topuria.
Well, the doctor said it's over, and then like the corner was like, no. But like the doctor waves his hand.
He's shaking his head,
no,
like, no. Nah. He's like, this guy can't see. He's literally doing this. He's like, no, I can't. He's not seeing my finger. And then,
crazy.
He gets a lot of, he's getting a lot of flack for quitting and staying on the stool. But it's like, I mean, he had his way out the round before. He just can't take that much damage.
Live to fight another day. He's 29 years old.
I mean, not that he's not going to live, but he might not be the same after that.
Well, that's a beating, bro. That was a beating of a lifetime. And, he's 29 years old. He's pound for pound number one in UFC. Like, that's the guy UFC probably wanted to win. Like, I think
Gaethje's
UFC was hoping, like, Gaethje's done. I mean, there is a road where if McGregor can beat Holloway, which is not going to be easy.
Not going to happen either.
McGregor versus Gaethje for the unified championship would be some epic scenes. That would be what the UFC is salivating
fighting
for
the grandpa belt.
Bunch of 35 plus guys. Love that.
Pretty awesome.
Love that. So
I mean, Holloway's old too. Holloway's not young. What is he? I know he's not as old because he's been fighting for so long.
He's just been around
but
forever.
He's got to be 35, 36.
He already fought McGregor. People like this is a rematch. So they're not even kind of billing it.
But listen, McGregor also already beat Dustin Poirier and then loses to him twice later on. So this is like this looks like the same scenario. Like, hey, he beat Holloway back in the day, dominated him, but Holloway is a lot fresher now.
Yeah, it was a really good card. The scenes were wild. I was 2-for-2 on my picks. And
I was 0-for-2. I was 0-for all of them. Actually, no. Yeah, because
one was picking.
I was thinking Derek Lewis was going to win. I actually didn't think Pereira was going to win, but
sucked.
I was like, he's my guy. So I'm gonna get my money on Pereira, although I didn't bet.
I just, everything I thought about Pereira came out to be true, unfortunately. He put on too much weight. He was too slow. And people really sleeping on Gon.
No, Gon's an awesome striker and a very good athlete.
He might be the best heavyweight in the world now. Hopefully get that ass.
Back in the day, I actually picked Gon to beat John Jones, and John wouldn't strike with him. John just choked him out immediately. As soon as he got the opportunity, he's like, nope, you're done.
I saw a lot of that talk. Like, once again, how good is John Jones?
I think for many years, he was the best fighter walking the planet.
It's amazing. He's got mad aura. When I watched him link up with Rampage on that stream, like, John Jones moves different.
Yeah, because he can beat up every single person walking the planet. Like, no one can beat him up. Like, he can beat you in everything. He was a crazy high-level wrestler. He can kick you. He can punch you. He can knock you out. He can choke you out. Everything. He literally does everything.
Well, Dana White says he's the best to ever do it.
I agree.
There were some boxing moments at the White House because we're living in this TKO world where they want everything under one umbrella and we want just combat to be owned by TKO. A little scary. But Tyson Fury, out of nowhere, has a walkout. They play his music. He comes down the steps of the White House. We're like, what the hell? Like, I sat up. I was like, I didn't see this. This wasn't on the bingo card.
What does hat say? He had a hat with a weird something on it.
Make Trump prime minister.
Yeah, wow. Talk about not making a political.
And okay. Yeah, Tyson Fury comes out. Okay, keep in mind that Fury supposedly was not allowed in the States. This is his first time in the States since 2021. It's the whole Kinahan connection. Obviously, Donald Trump expedited that process. He goes to with John Anik. And John Anik, we got Tyson Fury here. He's got a big announcement. Tyson Fury gets a mic. I'm going to let Dana White do that announcement. And then end of segment. Bro, it was so weird. It was the most Tyson Fury boxing thing ever. And I think a lot of MMA fans were like, what the hell was
you
that?
You can't schedule that man to and do things.
Right. And us boxing fans are like, that's par for the course.
We're used
like,
to that.
That's Tyson Fury number one. That's also just boxing, where you think you're going to get something or think you're going to get a fight, think you're going to get an announcement, and it ends up being nothing. But it's pretty damn obvious what this all means. Tyson Fury is going to sign with Zuffa. He posted on socials that Turkey is his promoter for the rest of his career. The main questions now is, what does this mean for the Joshua fight? Is the Joshua fight next? Will it happen in the U.S.? Will it happen at all? Will Tyson Fury's next tune-up happen in the States? That's what I think this is about. I think there will be an official announcement. Tyson Fury is your next big Zuffa signing. Blah, blah, blah. Who cares? He's at the end of his career. Doesn't really mean anything. Will his next fight be in the U.S. on a Zuffa / ring card before we get the Joshua fight? Because I still think we get the Joshua fight.
I do too. And I think it's exactly what you just said. I think that's the trail, the route. He's going to fight in the States. He's going to fight Joshua next. I was talking about this yesterday. I don't think the fans care about any of this. We don't care about promoters. We want the fights. As long as he still fights Anthony Joshua, who the hell cares who's promoting it?
Exactly.
That is head-to-head bullshit between Eddie and Dana. We don't care about that. Like, that's their egos. That doesn't matter. Give us the fights. That's what we want. I want to see the fights.
Especially a fight like this. This isn't the heavyweight fight we have to see. These are two guys past it.
One promoter, though, that I am interested in. Where's Frank Warren in all this?
When
do the lawsuits start dropping?
That's what I mean. Like, the only thing that's going to stop this fight from happening is going to be the political nonsense, lawsuits, litigation, Eddie Hearn's ego, Dana White's ego, Frank Warren's ego, everyone saying that they have the right to promote this fight, everyone saying that we need to be in it, we need to be involved. It's just out of control at this point. It's like I said, it's a big fight. It's a very important fight. I want to see it. But this isn't like Fury Usyk from a few years ago, where we're trying to figure out who's the best heavyweight undisputed type of fight. This isn't Tyson versus Lennox Lewis many years ago, where we had to jump through hoops. One of the first ever fights that was on both Showtime and HBO. Like, this is not that. So now when we see all these billionaires, promoters getting involved, this is when boxing fans are just like, ugh, really? All this for a Fury versus Joshua fight that should have happened 10 years ago?
Yeah, and then you got guys like Agui Cabayel who can't get a fight. You know, and
Cabayel's better fight Usyk next.
Yeah.
Like, Usyk, you're not even on this. You're not in this discussion.
They've been talking.
Like, Usyk, you're still.
Agui has been circling around Tyson Fury. They're talking about as a
well, because I think there's a world where they do fight
as a plan B for if Joshua fight doesn't happen, which, you know, and listen, that fight's not happening, by the way. Agui is getting pushed to the side over and over again, and he said that. He's like,
you don't think Usyk versus Cabayel is happening?
I actually do think that's the fight. I don't think we're Tyson.
What's the fight you said?
Tyson
not happening?
And Cabayel. I don't think that fight is.
Oh, no, that's like a crazy, crazy, like, consolation. Like, a lot of things have to go wrong.
They're basically, they're telling Agui that, like, no, just pipe down. If the Usyk fight doesn't happen, we'll give you this one. Meanwhile, that's never happening. But yeah, Agui said, he's like, I'm tired of being looked over. Like, I deserve a title shot. And he's absolutely right. He does. He should be next.
No. He's like mandated and like
that doesn't mean anything in this sport, Dan.
I know. But like
a kickboxer just fought for the title in front of him. mandated.
If Usyk decides to fight Verhoeven again, and Caballero has to wait, there is a world where Fury can say, "I'll fight Caballero for the title," and then that throws a wrench into everything. It's a dominoes. Like in a perfect world, and the realistic thing here should be Usyk versus Caballero. Do it in Germany. Fall. It's gonna be an awesome scene. Usyk wins that fight, whatever. Joshua Fury has to happen at Wembley. I don't care who's promoting it. Let Eddie walk out with Joshua. Let freaking Fury walk out with whoever he wants. Like, who cares? It's just come down to these guys. It's an Eddie Hearn, Dana White thing at this point.
That's exactly what it is. And the fans don't care. We just want AJ and Tyson.
Right, and Joshua has his tune-up July 25th.
This all worries me. The more time that is put in between this fight happening, the more fights that are put in between this fight happening, the further away this thing feels. And not just time-wise, just because so many things can go wrong.
Right. They can lose.
They can get cut. And then, they can get hurt. They can lose. They can look bad. There's just so many open doors for things to go bad.
And then the political stuff of it. The infighting with the promoters. The contract disputes. Like, remember, Fury, it took him forever to get that second Wilder fight. Both the guys took a number of tune-ups, if I'm not mistaken, and nonsense contractual issues for a fight at that point that we had to see.
Like,
Fury-Wilder 2 was important. Joshua Fury is not as important. It's a spectacle. Has to happen.
It's a good spectacle.
Like, there's no
it's a good fight. Good spectacle.
Oh, it's awesome. I agree. But is it worth all this nonsense that's going on that's only going to get worse over the next couple of weeks and months?
It's only worth it because of how much money is involved and the promoters. that's why.
It's got to be. It's got to be. I think Hearn deserves to be part of it. I think Frank Warren deserves to be part of it. Turkey obviously is going to finance it. Dana White does not deserve to be part of it, but he's the figurehead of Zuffa. He is the promoter. You know, Turkey's the financier and Dana's the promoter now. Like it used to be Frank and Eddie. But they're gone now. Like, Turkey dumped them. And Turkey's new shiny boyfriend/girlfriend is Dana White. Dana White, who doesn't answer to anybody. Yeah, you answer to Turkey, El Sheikh. Dana. All right. And with that being said, have a great weekend. We're going to have a very special episode of Inside Boxing on the next episode. A Father's Day-inspired episode. Hope you all enjoyed that. Anything, Chris? I'm going to be headed to the Knicks parade on Thursday. Pray for me.
Yes, I will. I'll light a candle. That's gonna be a scene. And better than me, my friend. Let me put it that way.
I'm not gonna be there at night. Sundown is when it's like back in the day when you're a kid. And like once the sun went down, once the street lights came on,
when the zombies come out,
you gotta go home. The Knicks parade once it gets into like 8 p.m. hour.
No, you should be long gone by then.
I need to be home on my couch because I'm old.
You should hang out and then go to a steakhouse. Do real old man stuff.
That's the plan. Like, everyone's asking me, Dan, what's the plan? I'm getting texts like, yo, what's your plan for the parade? Like, there is no plan. It's 5 million people trying to get to the same spot, a very narrow canyon of heroes in downtown Manhattan.
In your Knicks pride, you're blue and you're orange.
Exactly.
Drink a gluten-free beer. You sweat a lot. Or you get elbowed in the face a bunch of times. Someone steps on your shoes, get destroyed. People step all over your shoes.
You're wearing bad sneakers.
Yeah, you gotta wear bad sneakers. Shoes get destroyed, and then you leave and you go home exhausted, and you go have a steak, and then you go to sleep early.
Yeah, that's my plan: is to get there early, get a few picks, maybe do a few some content for FanDuel. Go like sliver out, get to a bar/restaurant, eat something good, get on the Long Island Railroad. Before it turns into a vomit.
Yeah, that's vomit another thing. Train. That train is going to be rough on the way home.
Dude, the subways are going to be packed to the gills. Everyone's getting down to, I don't know, people out there in Manhattan.
You're getting less and less jealous of your flex.
Yeah. Lower Manhattan is so, like, everything gets more condensed. And, like, the area that this Canyon of Heroes is, it's from Battery Park to City Hall. It's only 1 mile, and it's a very condensed, like, dense, narrow streets, Broadway, and they're expecting 3 million people, they said, which is a million more than any Yankee parade or New York Giants. I went to both the Yankee parade and the Giants parade for the most recent championships, and that was the most people I've ever seen in one place. This is the Knicks, who the entire city is rallied around. So they said maybe 3 or 4 million.
It's absurd. Absurd. New York's a vibe, man.
New York is a place to be. We've been down for a few years. We haven't won anything in like 15 years. Horrible winters. COVID just destroyed this city. It is so back. The vibes are so high. I'm going to get trampled on Thursday. I'm going to get stomped on. I'm going to probably throw up.
Do you have steel toe boots? Great.
It's supposed to be very
humid. I was going to say, in June, it's going to be really hot. So
they said like it's going to feel like 95 with a thunderstorm.
Nice. Plus so. 3 million people.
Oh, yeah, baby. Oh, nowhere else I'd rather be.
You're talking yourself out of it right now.
Yeah, I probably won't go. Morning of, I'm going to be like, yeah, I'm good. I'm going to watch it on TV and lay by my pool here on Long Island. All right, everyone, have a great weekend or week. Oh, we're not signing off for the weekend yet, but we'll see you the next time here on Inside Boxing. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Say those DMs.